Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Do you know, how did that end up becoming the shirt emblem, the shirt badge?
I suspect it's just because it's located in Everton and it's seen as sort of emblematic of the area. It doesn't speak wildly well of the area when your area is predominantly defined by a drunk tank, but I think it's suitable.
At the end of the day, football. It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Hello, welcome to episode 11 of Comedians Talking About Football. I'm Sam Michael with you as always, and this is the third episode of the second series. If you haven't listened to this series so far, go back. We've got a couple of great episodes, including Joseph Parsons and Mark Olver. Our guest today, though, is Sam White, and she's talking about Everton. And this is the perfect time to drop this episode. If you're listening to this in the far future, I just want to let you know that we are putting this episode out the week after Everton have beaten Liverpool, the reigning champions of the Premier League. They've beaten them 2-0 in the Merseyside derby. So I couldn't ask for a better result last weekend with this episode going out. Sam White is a comedian, and many of you probably know her from her brilliant online presence. I found her through Twitter, as I'm sure many of you did, and you can follow her on there at Sam White. This is a really good episode, and I really appreciate Sam coming on. Oh, actually, I should just add that this was recorded right at the beginning of the season when both Everton and Reading were top of the table. So excuse my optimism when recording this. Anyway, without further ado, this is Sam White on Comedians Talking About Football, and she's talking about Everton FC. Well, first of all, Sam, we share the same name, but that's not all we share. We both support teams that are currently, as we record this, we both support teams that are top of the league.
Oh, wow. So Reading are top. That's amazing.
You're big time. Yeah, I said that to my friend earlier and he went, wow, you're top of League One. I was like, no, hang on a minute. Whoa. No, top of the Championship. He was like, I don't think so, mate. I think you're sporting the wrong deal. No, they are top of the Championship, and Everton are currently top of the Premier League.
It's really weird. You've got me at a time when Everton are good. It's like, you know, it's like recording when Hayley's Comet's going past. This is not something I'm necessarily used to.
It's quite something, really. I mean, I think Everton were one of those teams who, I think after Moyes left, they had a bit of a struggle. They seemed to go, like, shoot for quite big things. They got in some really good players, and sometimes it didn't quite pay off. But this does seem like the change is coming. I mean, I personally was surprised how people were a little bit, I mean, obviously not Everton fans, I'm sure, but a lot of people, when Jay Rodriguez came, a lot of people were like, oh, you know, he was all right in 2014. I'm like, no, just Jay Rodriguez. He's going to be quality.
The Richard Keys blog was fantastic. I don't know if you've seen that.
No.
Oh, it was magnificent. Because, I mean, for a man so perennially wrong as well, and for such a sort of dinosaur basket case. His assertion was that if James Rodriguez was any good, he wouldn't be coming to Everton, so we should actually put in a bid for Troy Deeney. Oh. I'm actually serious. Oh, I love it, man.
How has he still got a career with anything to do with football? I mean, that dinosaur, we all know why he left Sky, but wow.
It's almost comforting that he's got this job in the Middle East, because he's sort of, he's exiled, but he's a reminder of what broadcast journalism used to be like with football. But it used to be loads of little Richard Keyses, and it's almost a relief he's still there, just to remind us how far we've come.
Oh, definitely. I mean, wow, Troy Deeney. I mean, no, that's Troy Deeney, great guy. I really love him, rate him as a footballer, but just Jay Rodriguez. Do you know what I mean?
And
there's some quite. I think Decore was a great signing as well.
Decore looks good, and Alan even looks fantastic.
Yeah,
I think that like a holding role is often overlooked, because it's hard work without glory, isn't it? But it's kind of a fulcrum. And if you've... Honestly, our midfield was so toothless until recently. We had teams strolling through us. So if you've got an Allen and a Decore and a James Rodriguez, then you can really play forward, play really advanced without worrying about being caught on the counter so much. It's two games in, let's not get carried away. But it's been amazing. Yeah, we've had two really good games.
I mean, you say don't get carried away, but there I am, a Reading fan, two games down top of the league, and I just want them to call lockdown and just void the league as it is at the moment and just declare everything finished.
Exactly, like they were going to do with Liverpool.
Yeah, and then the title. That would have been hilarious. I was talking about that with a friend the other day about... how he almost, he's a Southampton fan, but for some reason he's really, he doesn't like Liverpool. I think it's still back to the fact that they took all their players about 5-6 years ago. And he
were at Liverpool training academy for
they
a
were, yeah. They used to call them, congratulations, the Liverpool under 23s every time they were met. But when he said, I wish they'd been handed the title, because then it wouldn't feel that official. Like, they had a great season and they still even had 9 games left to play, but there'd always be that little asterisk next to their name.
FC, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, it's undignified how much it hurts. Because we got away with it in, was it 2014? Gerrard slip year.
Yeah.
Which, that's the only time I've ever put a bet on football, strangely. When they were 6-1, I put £20 on them winning it, so I thought, I'm going to need it if they win it. I'm going to need a weekend. And
parachute baby.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to lie, it's extremely painful. You can't even say they don't deserve it.
That is the thing, yeah. They did very, very well. But as an Evertonian from Liverpool, what is that rivalry actually like there?
Brutal.
Because it seems worse for Everton, because sometimes it feels like they hate Liverpool so much, but Liverpool don't hate them as much as they hate Manchester United.
Well, they say this, but... whenever they win a derby, they do a very good impression of people who really care about it. That's, you used to get that all the time. You're not actually a very big fixture to us. Shut up.
So as we always start with, like, you know, football heaven, football hell. And I'd say that the football heaven at the moment is the future of Everton, and it does look bright. I mean, another player as well I love is obviously Calvert-Lewin,
who's just quality.
I mean, he's been wonders for me and my fantasy football team. Thank you. And I mean, that's got to be good news for him, because he was looking good for a bit last season, but now with the Euros at the end of the 2020-2021 season, there's got to be a chance for him there.
Absolutely. I think if you're quite a conventional centre forward, you're hugely dependent on the players playing behind you. And that's what's made the difference, definitely, with Calvert-Lewin. And you've got Richarlison there as well, which is awesome. But when you've got Hammers feeding passes through to you, it's centre forward's absolute dream. I'd really hope he gets a look in, even if he doesn't play in the upcoming Euros. It'd be nice to see him in the squad, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I suppose at the moment there is, though, had it happened last summer, you sort of had, it seemed like that final position was going to go to Danny Ings. And now it looks like his place could be up for grabs, because there are a few young strikers now, English strikers like him, who are really coming through the ranks. And there's a lot of opportunities there now, I think.
Well, certainly with Danny Ings's age. I mean, what is he, 32?
I think so, around 30s, yeah.
So, and we know this about Southgate. He doesn't like including players that he doesn't see as having a future. He likes to include players that have got a sort of, will be long-term staples. So I absolutely see no reason why not if he goes on as he's going. He's not a massive guy, but he's got physicality and he just connects at the right moment if he's being served well. So I'd really hope so. It'd be lovely.
I mean, there's lots of goals at the moment. I mean, you look at the scores of the last couple of games, and as I said, as we've recording this, we're only already 2 weeks in, well, two games really into the Premier League, and you look at some results like Everton 5, West Brom 2, Leeds 4, Fulham 3, Man United 1, Crystal Palace 3. You know, there's high scoring games. I mean, it just seems an opportunity, goals galore at the moment. I hope it continues.
It's brilliant. It's like Boxing Day used to be when they all turned up half pissed. they conceded at least three because the goalkeeper was retching on the sideline. It's fantastic. I've really enjoyed it.
I'd like to think that's the same reason now. They all sort of thought they had their lockdown. They thought we got 4 weeks, let's make the most of it. A few of them went to Zante while they could have been, and they've all come back.
Yeah, they've all got a little bit of timber, all got, you know, Sambuca still in the system. I would hope so.
That's how we like our football here. That's how we like it. So we're then going moving, as we said, supporting Everton, football heaven, very recent. But then also, it must be the case for football hell as well, with Liverpool winning the title. Hate to bring it up again. I mean, the fact is that I suppose that must have been a nice thing for Everton for so long in that kind of rivalry that they hadn't won anything for 30 years.
Oh, we were really hanging on to that. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it was worse. It was something to hold on to, certainly in the early 90s. You could remember, for my first 10 years going, it was a good season for us if we were safe with 5 games to go. The first, this is before Moyes, the whole first decade was bleak, man.
Yeah.
And they've just, Liverpool just sort of chuntering away, underachieving, has been a massive comfort. This has been unceremoniously snatched away from us. Never mind, eh?
Oh, man. There we go. But who knows? Wouldn't it be perfect? And obviously, I'm going to. Stranger things have happened, Sam. Stranger things have happened. As former guest Jack Topher, Leicester fan, knows.
Yeah.
You never know. Wouldn't it be perfect if after 30 years, Liverpool pick up the title? And then just saying, I know, what are the odds? I mean, I could probably look up now, the odds would be something you might not want to see. But imagine if then after those 30 years, Everton go and win the title straight up.
I can't even allow myself to fantasize about that.
Yeah,
like I'm far too superstitious. It'd be Palace now, won't it?
That's the thing, isn't it? Because I think there's something, especially with English football fans, of that kind of optimism is never quite there. Because like I said a minute ago, a former guest, Jack Topher, who's a Leicester fan, I sort of said to him, when did you start to believe and think we could do this? And he said, well, I didn't really. I went, what about when, like, you know, Chelsea scored that second goal and there were seconds to go? And he went, I still didn't quite get it. It wasn't until, I think, full time went, he still didn't believe it. And he had to go down to the stadium just to see the other fans and just admit that this had happened. Like, it is something about that. But what I like is, and I feel this a little bit as a supporting a not very big team, a bit of a tin pot team. is there something, and I mean this fully respectfully, I think there's something nice, especially in like a rivalry like Everton and Liverpool. You're probably going to shoot me for saying this, but there's something nice about being the underdog.
Well, there has to be, because how else do you frame your existence? How else do you frame supporting Everton through being the underdog? I mean, in the 90s, we were known as dogs of war, because we were extremely old school, straightforward underdogs, just loads of big bastards like that. That was, we were very reliant on that for a long time. So I think however you were when you get into supporting a club is how you imagine it will be for all time. Like, there are those older than me who remember the 80s who think our natural place is to be winning stuff.
Yeah.
There are people slightly younger than me who only remember Moyes, and they think that we're just always between 6 and 12.
Right.
And but for me, I still habitually check who we have to beat on the last day of the season to stay up.
Because, really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no.
Well, my first season, 94, was the Wimbledon 3-2. It was an absolute miracle we stayed up. God, Wimbledon don't even exist anymore, do they? That's grim. but for younger listeners, they were good. Yeah, Wimbledon were good. And after being two down, we somehow stayed up, coming back to 3-2 with a 35-yard screamer by Barry Horn.
Wow, Barry Horn.
Yeah. Because you get commentators saying the following season, oh, we can hit him from this distance, and he absolutely can't. That was just some weird aberration. So it's just the weirdest thing. And then we nearly went down again in 98, but essentially we, throughout the 90s, we could have gone every season. So
you say then about the 94 season was kind of your first. What were your early memories of Everton, and how did you get into supporting Everton Football Club?
Well, I think it's sort of passed down through family. My granddad came to Liverpool. He was a policeman, and he policed both Everton and Liverpool games, and preferred Everton. So he took my dad, who took me and my sister. And yeah, you're just sort of cursed at birth, aren't you? It's whichever way it goes, it's handed to you. You can't shun it. But yeah, so I think 93 would have been the first game. It would have been eight. It would have been against Man City. I think we won 1-0. I think Paul Rideout scored. But yeah, we struggled that season. We were bad.
Well, I mean, the Premier League was only, one season old at that point. And in fact, I think that's maybe around the same time I went to my first game as well. What were your... So it was your dad who took you to those first games, and your sister as well. Oh, brilliant. Mm. And was that... Because that's quite still a young age, you know, eight years old. Because I'm one of these people who kind of liked football when they're about sort of 8, 9. I went off it for a few years, got back into it kind of in my mid-teens when I started playing it again. Was that it? Were you just a fan from then on?
Yeah. I think you don't really understand at 7 or 8, do you? And it's maybe, if you're constantly into it, it's maybe 10 or 11 that you're a bit more aware of the process, and you can look up stats and you can devour stuff. It's great. And that was especially good because it was 1995, we won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
So that's like peak age for me. Like 10 to 11, you're absolutely devouring every inch of it. It's fantastic.
I think that's what it is. Something happens, whether it be something good or something bad, that hooks you into football. I think if you just go and support a team who are kind of mediocre and kind of nothing much happens when you support them, it's very easy to lose interest. I think for me, what kept me in football was I think, like you said, it's either something beautiful, like an FA Cup final win, or it's something heartbreaking. For me, I think it was England losing in the 1998 World Cup. That is my first football heartbreak, and I'm never quite over it. You look back at anything else and you go, you know, Euro 96, we gave it our all, not really Southgate's fault, but he's redeemed himself. You look back at 2018, wow, we were outclassed on the day. But 98, I still, if I ever watch the clips, I'm still angry about it now.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
But also, we had, we're at our worst when we have expectations. Like, 2018 was brilliant because we went into it thinking, might get out of the group.
Yeah.
Like, be sound, not really expecting anything. And then it was just wonderful. It was a really good World Cup as a whole. And then, but yeah, certainly, the thing about 93, the thing about avoiding relegation, rather, is it's awful, but when you do it, it's so exhilarating. It's like the most amazing thing to swerve relegation on the final day. So, yeah, you're equally cursed and blessed with it, aren't you? Like you say.
So back then, who were your kind of early heroes at Everton? I mean, that would have been the era of, you know, the great Duncan Ferguson, who I'd like to talk about in a minute. But who else were you really into?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, Duncan Ferguson was amazing, obviously. Slightly later on, Andrei Kanchelskis.
Yeah, Andrei Kanchelskis, yeah.
And I think probably he's the closest I've seen to a player like Hammers. Like, just a properly classy, beautiful, silky sort of winger, but also attacking midfielder. It's fantastic. So, yeah, probably him. I always used to really enjoy watching Andy Hinchcliffe play.
Andy Hinchcliffe, okay, yeah. Who was people forget, was part of that 98 World Cup squad.
Yeah. Mm. I can't remember how many caps he got. I don't think it was loads.
He's always my go-to answer if I ever go on Pointless. I always think he's, because he's been involved in so many random England squads or like various kind of cup final ties. I always think, like, name a player who played in the cup final, Andy Hinchcliffe. Name a player who's had a cap for England, but, you know, one cap or two caps for England, Andy Hinchcliffe. He's your go-to answer for any football quiz if you want to look clever.
Absolutely. But also, like, I don't know, it's an early marauding fullback, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, took a good free kick, took a good corner. And I think the side of the ground I sat in as well meant we were shooting towards the Gladys Street when he was in front of me at the ground. So it's just who catches your eye, isn't it? Oh, Neville Southall, of course.
I was about to say Neville Southall, yeah. Do you follow him on Twitter?
Yes.
He's great, isn't he?
He's amazing. It's like, I don't know, it's weird. I met him when I was a kid and he was amazing. And now I'm grown up and he's still amazing. It's like, just occasionally your heroes do not disappoint.
Yeah, I love that. Does he still, I don't know if he still does this, but I remember he used to kind of rent out or loan out his Twitter account to various causes, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he still does it. I think it got... There was a hiatus because it ended up being taken over by an adult baby account.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
So I think he gave it a rest. I think he does it again now. But he's he works in a people referral unit in Wales.
Really?
So he's not like... Yeah, he's not like... he's probably the last of those that didn't make a lot of money through football. So, yeah, he's got a couple of foster kids, works with kids who are struggling for his day job, and still does, like, loads of fundraisers and stuff in the evenings. He's a proper mensch, Neville Southall.
Have you come here? Get in there!
Well done, he's 13.
Game, set and match, Owen.
But yeah, so going back then, I want to talk a bit about Duncan Ferguson because, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm a little bit annoyed in a way that Everton are doing so well because there was a little period where Duncan Ferguson was kind of a caretaker manager for like a couple of games. And I just thought, please, it would be so good. I can just imagine him in like management, especially at Everton.
Yeah, what's fantastic about that, though, is he's still assistant manager.
So he's still involved, yeah, but he just looks so imposing. I just thought Duncan Ferguson in a suit. I just couldn't imagine such a thing.
Cuddling the ball boys and everything.
Yeah.
And scored. It was amazing. It's been involved all the way along since he retired. But I think perhaps if you're a Carlo Ancelotti, if you're quite tactically aware and possibly a bit cerebral. Maybe you need an enforcer as your second in command. And I kind of love that he'll be the one going imposing the will of Don Carlo. It's I love him. He's fantastic. He was all that was good for a very long time. There were some very dark days when it was only Duncan Ferguson that was good.
What about the presence of Carlo Ancelotti now, his arrival, and he takes over next week? What does that mean for you?
That's brilliant. It's fantastic for the club, isn't it? I mean, the guy that paid to come here, I can't wait to start working with him, and I'm sure I'll learn a lot.
Have you chatted to him at all?
Not at all, no. But hopefully we'll have a chat today and a glass of red wine.
Work out your role here.
That's it, yeah. I think I'll get a few bottles of red wine doing it, mate. I might become the co-manager or something.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Where did you watch that 95 final?
Well, I didn't get to go. And my dad slept. There was a good few hundred people. We didn't have a season ticket. So obviously you only get Wembley tickets if you've got enough away stubs or a season ticket. And my dad slept outside Goodison Park trying to get tickets for it as well. And I think he got to about 50 from the front.
Bless him.
I know. It would have been in my front room, but there was zero expectation because it was Man U.
Yeah.
And we'd just somehow beaten Spurs in the semi. We'd beaten them like 4-1 and everybody expected the final to be a Spurs United showdown.
Yeah.
And it was that little bit sweeter by, bollocks to you all. No, we're going to be in it actually. It's just in my front room, just with my parents, because I was only little.
Oh, they're the best things. It's very brilliant. And then you've got, the fact is, what people forget that I suppose these days it'd be a little bit easier to get to, but I mean, old Wembley didn't have as many seats back then, unfortunately.
No, but by the end it was ready for replacing as well, actually, because the times I went between, I did get to go in 95, but I've been since with England stuff, and it was really ready for going by the time it had gone. People glorify it, but it was, it was barely holding up by the end.
Ah, old Wembley. Old Wembley. I only went to see that Bohemian Rhapsody film because I heard it had CGI old Wembley in it.
Was it recognisable?
Yeah, it was great because my wife wanted to go and see it, and I was like, I like Queen, but I wasn't massively fussed about seeing the film. I quite enjoyed it. But she showed me the trailer and went, look at this. And there's a bit, obviously, from Live Aid. I went, oh, they've recreated old Wembley. Let's go. And I was sat through the whole film just going, when's Wembley coming up? And they do. You see everything. They've really played it nicely, which just goes to show that my screenplay for the World Cup 1966 World Cup final is all ready to go. Failing that, the playoff final from 1995, Reading versus Bolton, the biggest heartbreak in football history. Good to go as well. Rejected by Universal.
That's devastating. People won't remember who Bolton are in 5 years, will they?
Oh no, my friend's a Bolton fan.
Oh no,
because it's very similar. It's always very much, isn't it? It gets passed down for generations, and he grew up. I mean, with me down south of England and everything in Berkshire, but his dad was a Bolton fan because his granddad was, and he grew up a Bolton fan, which I'm sure in the days of Nicholas and Elka, Sam Allardyce was all fine, but now they're down in League Two. It's, oh, bless them. Yeah, it's very sad, actually. You know, I'm worried with everything that's going on at the moment that there's going to be more teams suffering in that
way. That's the thing, however bad it is. As long as you're not being asset stripped, as long as you're not actually going out of business, it's terrible. There's going to be lots more. Mm. In many ways, Bury are ahead of the curve, aren't they? Because they were starting to get a Phoenix club set up even before COVID. So before, the other dominoes started falling, they're probably doing okay right now rather than being a Wigan or a Bolton or who else has got Macclesfield.
Yeah, they're the latest, aren't they, Macclesfield? Mm. It always seems to be, sadly, that whenever these teams go under or when there's issues now, a lot of them are saying, do you know what, yeah, COVID's one thing, but we saw this coming a mile off because the management's not any good.
Yeah. And there's the owners and directors test, isn't there? But I don't think it places many demands on ownership.
No.
So, you know, you can still just be sold off to any tin pot nobody who wants to filter some funds for you.
No.
So it could be worse. It could always be worse.
It could always be worse, Sam. You're absolutely right. We were talking a bit about old Wembley back then. One place I've never been to. I've been outside as Goodison Park. I had a little walk around outside once. What's that like as a ground?
It's really old school in a really pleasant way. I think I'm trying to think of similar grounds. It's not, if you've been to Villa Park.
Yes.
It's got a very similar vibe to Villa Park.
Oh, great.
And as you'll know, it's less than a mile away from Anfield. So it's still kind of bricks and pillars and surrounded by terrace housing. It's the sort you don't see anymore, really. And when it's good, it's amazing because it's really enclosed as well. I think that's another problem with modern stadiums is the kind of circular, very gently sloping ones. You don't get much of an atmosphere. But when it's very built up and very enclosed within four walls, it can really build up. And when it's good, it's great. But when it turns, it's toxic. It's like, you know, when things went bad under Ronald Koeman, for example, it was just, the atmosphere was putrid. And as much as it can bounce and, you know, the Gladys Street can suck a goal in, once they're unhappy, they're really unhappy. But yeah, it looks like we might be moving anyway. It looks like we're going to move to the dock side. To Bramley Moor.
What do you make of that move? Because I personally, for me, I really love the old grounds. I mean, the guest on the last or one of the previous episodes was Nathan Caton, who's a Brentford fan, and we were talking about Griffin Park.
Griffin Park.
And I love Griffin Park. It's always been one of my favourite away days to do, and it's just such a nice little. I mean, I understand obviously if they're a team who are sort of knocking on the door of the Premiership, you're going to want a bigger ground. But it's still a shame that all these little, well, not always little, but these sort of town grounds and ones that have been there for so long, especially one like Goodison Park, kind of going.
It's a shame that you've got to draw your income from it. And your long-term sustainability depends on having a bigger ground. In our instance, I think this is the same with Griffin Park. It's not too bad because there will be a purpose-built football stadium. But so much of your financial viability is based on not just gates, but events and marketing and whatnot, and income you can draw from your stadium. So yeah, it is a shame, but it's a shame in the same way. Everything you have to do for financial viability is a shame. You know, in the same way that the Premier League has made everything about income.
No, unfortunately, that is the way. And if you do make that move. Obviously, me not being too familiar with the area, is it still quite accessible for fans to walk to from the local area?
Yeah, in fact, it'll be easier.
Oh, really? that's good.
Well, in some respects, because we're currently in Walton, which is a very sort of working class, proper sort of old school Liverpool area. It is where people live. But to get to the docks, you can just hop off the train and walk down. So it still will be really, it'll still be where people are. Whereas, like, there was talk of us moving to Kirby ages ago, and it would have been outside the city, and that would have been grim because you at least want it to feel like you're surrounded by the people who are supporting you.
Yeah, I mean, that can be the issue sometimes. I mean, I do think it's good that White Hart Lane and whatever they're calling the stadium now, New White Hart Lane, the Tottenham Stadium, is kind of where it was. I think that's good because my father-in-law, he's from East London and Essex, and he's, you know, a West Ham fan. He's been going since the 70s. And I remember him going to the Berlin ground just before it closed. And I've been with him once to the new ground. And yeah, it's going to take a little bit of a while to get used to. Because my very first game back a similar time when you went to your first game was a West Ham game. So it was quite nice. I said, I'll go with him to a game. I think it was West Ham Newcastle, which you'd expect to be really loud. And you know, you get there and we did sort of all the old traditions. We went Mile End in East London, all these old boozers he used to go to. And it was great atmosphere. Then you got on the train, you stopped at the Olympic Park, and then you went on an Olympic run to get to the ground. It was like a marathon to get there. You get off the train and they're all there, I'm forever blowing bubble, and it feels like a good atmosphere. And then about 2 miles down the road, I'm forever blowing bubble. And you finally get to the ground. It's a beautiful stadium, don't get me wrong. And we were unfortunately right up in the nosebleeds. And when they were all singing, I'm forever blowing bubbles, that was good. And then kind of, you know, 5 minutes into the game, can you sit down, please, sir? I just remember, you know, I was sat next to him, and this is a man who's, you know, used to go in the 70s and the 80s and stuff, and two seats down from us there was a kid on an iPad playing a game, and I just saw him look at him like, what is happening?
even if you're at the front, you're a long way away, aren't you, there? Because of the athletics track and whatnot. So if you're up in the gods, I don't think I've been to one of the newer ones. But, you must feel a long way away.
Because like you were saying before, there's one end of Goodison Park which can suck in a goal. And if you move, it might take a little bit of time to get that sort of back together. And because when I went to this West Ham, you could see there was kind of patches of fans stood up around the ground. They're like, okay, that corner is the loud corner. Oh, no, over there behind the goal is the loud corner. And I think what they need to do is sort of get them together to like a singing standing section and go from there, really. But hopefully that won't be the same issue with Everton.
I think what gives me some hope is that it is going to be built as a football stadium. Because if you have it built like you say, is like the Olympic Stadium, that's built for athletics, and it's just not, like, acoustically it's not built to be a good atmosphere for football. So it's converted. I mean, it's a bit the same at the Etihad. That was that's formerly Commonwealth Games. It's just really noticeable that it's not built for the purpose it's being used for. But like you say, I think Chelsea's new one is going to be virtually same site and enclosed, same as Spurs, isn't it? So hopefully they'll start all building them with at least the express purpose that you can enjoy football there.
Hopefully. And the good thing is it's staying where it is. It'd be awful if it was just this long walk down on the docks or something in the middle, like it is at West Ham. It's sad because they come out like, yeah, we've won. And then it's just this very empty ground with a couple of Nandos and stuff around.
Oh, gosh. Like on a sort of deserted out-of-town retail park.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, as a Reading fan, I know how that feels. Because we are literally at a retail park is where our ground is.
I've never been to the Medeski, sorry.
Not many have, don't worry.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
How did you get into, we talked about your venture into supporting Everton. What was your venture into the world of comedy?
Gosh, I guess I started... I'd always fancied doing it, and it must be about 5 years ago. It was somebody invited me to do an open spot for charity, where you did a course and then you tried to sell 10 tickets, and then they made money out of it. And actually, I just kept doing the North West Circuit's really good in that respect, that you can just, there's loads of places you can just turn up and do it. And if you've always fancied it, it doesn't even really matter if you're any good or not. You can just turn up and you can do it. There's loads of places where you'll be embraced. Strangely, if I took a bit of a break and I just started doing it again when COVID hit. So I think everyone's discovering whether they've got a side hustle or not now, aren't they? Because nobody knows what's going to still be there in 6 months' time. Lots of sort of pokey upstairs rooms that have served such a great purpose, and I don't know how many will still be there.
But I mean, that, I suppose what you're saying about side hustle and everything, you've done a lot of writing as well. You've got a lot of credits sort of up there as well, and you've done a bit of football writing as well.
Yeah, bits and pieces. I'm actually hoping to start a podcast with my friend Kelly Wells, who's also a football writer, but a more experienced football writer than me, certainly. But it's remarkable how many areas of your life football bleeds into. So if you've got any kind of inclination to write at all, it's just such an obvious and easy, natural thing to write about. It's really, yeah, it's really good. Really enjoy doing that.
So this podcast coming up then, so what's...
We're not entirely clear on the format of it, but there's going to be football, there's going to be mental health, and there's going to be just nonsense. So it's not going to be hyper serious. It's not going to be massively sort of, it's not going to be tactical breakdowns football-wise. But it will be a lot of chatter. It's just, COVID is just a chance to see if you've got any aptitude for it.
Yeah.
And if you have, then it's worth the risk, isn't it?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. So have you gigged at all then since lockdown, when things started to get a bit easier?
I gigged the day before lockdown. I've not been able to since. I had a bereavement in the middle of COVID as well, so I've been incredibly busy. But I know it is opening up a bit. I know there's lots of people who are doing online gigs and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't do any of them. I did one, I think. They just didn't look very appealing to me. I think it's because I watched one and just thought, oh my God, no. But now that seems like it might be coming back again. We've had this little window open. Because, see, I had the same thing to you. I gigged, I think, 2 days before the lockdown came in Reading. And I was leaving there with Bobby Mayer. And we were kind of talking on the way back of saying, whoa, what do you think is going to happen? And he was kind of like, well, I don't care. I've got a TV work, man. I'm cool. I was like, yeah, cool, man. I'm just a little open micer. I don't know nothing. He was like, you know, I got TV work. I was like, well, I've got a full-time job. I'm just doing this. I'm an open micer, mate. And we were like, hey, we're okay. Don't worry. I'm like, all right, yeah, good attitude. I take that. And then obviously there was, you know, during lockdown, there was the issues with funding and everything, and the hashtag save live comedy. And then as comedy started to open up again, I managed to run a couple of nights in my hometown in Swindon, which was great. They were outside. We did a curry and comedy night, which was great fun. And then I've done a couple of gigs since as well. And I've died on my ass at every single one. So now I just want live comedy to burn. I'm sick of it. I hate it.
Great thing about doing it online is you absolutely can't tell if you're dying.
Yeah, that's true.
Problem is, if you don't have constant feedback, you've got no idea, and you start writing for yourself, not for an audience.
Yeah, that's true,
because everyone's got jokes that they love and that just don't work live. It could be your favourite joke in the world, and it won't. If it doesn't bang with an audience, you've just got to let it go.
Yeah, that's and the other thing is if you have a bad gig, normally you can go, well, 3 days later, I'll work on that, do something else, and you might have another crap gig, but then after that, you might have a decent one a few days after that. Whereas now, the chances are so few and far between at the moment that, you know, there is that break. But yeah, it was annoying having a really good gig before lockdown, then having the break and just sort of enjoying that for so long. And then but no, it's a shame. I mean, I think some will survive, hopefully, and some people, I mean, obviously, as I said, the chances are few and far between, but it's good to have people, you know, especially the professionals and people who rely on this as an income, being able to get back out there and doing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many people doing it. There's so many people doing it for love in comedy. Like, you know when you gig for the, you know, people who are happy to gig, including me and you, I'm sure, for a sort of £10 from the door money. It's there's enough people who just do it for the love of it that will keep it going, hopefully, as long as there are actually venues in future and we're ever allowed to leave the house again.
Yeah. and I miss the people as well. I mean
I think
nice.
it's very similar to football in that way, in that you've got your comedy friends who you only see through comedy, and you've got your football friends who you only see through football.
Yeah.
And your work friends who you only see through day work, and we're cut off from all of them at the moment. At least it emphasizes how many different groups of people make up your life.
Very true. So here's a question then for you. What maybe in the early days when you were doing stand up, or maybe if you've got a gig that a little bit nerve wracking, big gig, or like the first gig maybe back after lockdown, what is your own personal team talk to yourself to get you riled up for it?
Oh God, you know, the first time, I can still remember this from years ago, the first time I ever gigged. Do you know Sam Avery?
I know the name, don't know by person, but know the name.
Yeah, I remember speaking to him and he said, just hum zag cars.
Amazing. That's fantastic. Oh, that's brilliant.
I've certainly been known to do that. Certainly if it's one that I'm a bit nervous about, I think, that'll still get you going.
Oh, brilliant.
It's amazing the sort of visceral reaction you can have to something like that.
That's probably for this podcast especially, that's probably the best answer you could have given. Very on brand, very on brand.
It's just such a similar feeling to before a match that you're dreading. It's just remarkably similar. So it is somehow a massive comfort.
I can actually see that. I mean, I suppose the nervousness before a game is, say, take a big cup game, a cup semi-final, cup final, whatever. It's big and it's great and it's mostly nerve-wracking because you can know it can go either two ways. You know what's up for grabs, which is just, you know, euphoria, but you also know what the risk is as well. And that can be the same with a big gig. You know that it can be just that you smash it, you're going to dine out on this for so long, it's going to be great, but you die on your ass. Boy.
At least it's only in comedy, it's only... If you're doing a club set, it's only maximum of 20 minutes, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that can feel like a long time.
Yeah, that can feel like 90 minutes plus extra time and penalties. But no, it's good. At least, no, 20 minutes, subbed off.
Yeah. Oh, could you imagine if you could just...
Oh, no. Do you know what? Oh, that would be... That could, I do not, it won't surprise me if at some point someone runs, I say somewhere, London, where they would do some sort of open mic thing where you get to like 3 minutes and they can just see that the MC would just go,
yeah.
On you go, mate, on you go, get up, you're on.
Oh God, yeah, some poor sod from the under 23s comes on for you. It's grim.
One similarity I've noticed in some of the gigs, I'm not going to name any names, don't want to dob anyone in, sorry government, I'm not going to snitch, but I've liked that a lot of people have come off stage and interacted with the MC in the same way that footballers come off and interact with the managers at the moment. So they come off and they do that kind of elbow thing.
Yeah.
They'll do the elbow thing. And this cracks me up in football. They keep doing this elbow thing, or they do this kind of, do that. That looks cooler when you sort of hit each other like that. But then straight after they've done that, obviously you wouldn't want to shake hands. That's dangerous. They then cuddle each other.
Yeah.
I love that. That absolutely cracks me up. They go, all right, well done. Oh, yeah, well done. Yeah, hey, there we go.
We know this from science. It is only our hands that are vectors of disease.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. It's so good to have you on. But thing is, Sam White, you come on here and you go, oh, I'm an Everton fan. I went when I was 8 and cup finals, Duncan Ferguson's and Andy Hinchcliffe's and all that. But the thing is, you can't just come on to any podcast and claim that. You have to take some sort of test. Therefore, it is that time of the podcast where you take the sudden death 10 question quiz.
Oh, bloody hell.
Don't worry, it's a quiz all about your beloved Everton. And I'll tell you what, oh God, this is going to be really bad. I keep getting shit from a few listeners for forgetting to do this. Have you ever seen the Richard Herring podcast?
Yeah.
He has emergency questions. I have emergency facts that I like to drop in to the interview, which I haven't done one yet. So I better throw one of these in really quickly. Okay, here's a great thing I found out. So this is along the lines of the rivalry as well, to do with Everton and Liverpool. And that is that Everton's relatively new merchandise store was placed very cleverly, probably influenced by Toffee supporters. Everton's second megastore, complete with everything a blue scouser could want, you know, named Everton 2 in the fashion of their first megastore, Everton 1, where the first shop is located off Walton near Goodison Park. The second store was opened in the Liverpool 1 shopping centre near the heart of the city. As a result, part of Everton's second megastore actual address reads Everton 2, Liverpool 1.
Indeed. Yeah, I should point out as well that the first mega store was never originally called Everton One. That
was
is
it not?
No, they rebranded two shops to do that joke, which I
really?
Think is totally worth. Yeah, absolutely worth it. I think that's funny to this day.
I love that. I think that's great. So if you were to write something or send something back to that store, you have to write Everton 2, Liverpool 1.
Liverpool
that's
one.
Fantastic. And then I wanted to, well, this is something I found in my research, was the Prince Rupert's Tower.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Of course, can be in the crest as well. Yeah. And I wanted to sort of fact check this because I only found it on a certain things and some are saying it's something completely different. It was essentially, it was a lockup, but it used to hold... It was a holding place where local drunks were taken to sober up by parish constables.
Yeah, it was essentially a drunk tank. And I'm not even sure how it worked its way into the crest, but it is on, it's on Everton Brow. It's still there. I don't think they put drunks in it anymore. But yeah, it was essentially a drunk tank and for minor offenders as well who were facing magistrates in the morning. They'd just be kept in it overnight.
Amazing. Do you know, how did that end up becoming the shirt emblem, shirt badge?
I suspect it's just because it's located in Everton and it's seen as sort of emblematic of the area. It doesn't speak wildly well of the area when your area is predominantly defined by a drunk tank, but I think it's suitable.
And final fact, it's nothing amazing, but I just thought this was quite nice. And it goes back to what we're talking about with grounds and everything. It hosted 5 World Cup games in 1966.
It did. My dad saw Eusebio play there.
No way, really?
Yeah, apparently it was incredible. It was like, because it did host loads, and one of them was Brazil, and it was vintage Brazil. So, I think everyone's dad, lots of Liverpool dads have got a story about 66 and which games they went to and so
amazing.
On.
Amazing. Well, that was what I was going to finish that bit with. The 12th of July, 1966, where Pelé's graced the Goodison Park pitch.
Indeed.
Pelé himself.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, facts are one thing, but still, you know, these are the questions. So, we're taking these from the BBC website, and I know probably people are going to think I'm being a bit harsh because most of the questions before have come from the CBBC website or the Beano website. I'm going to treat you with respect, Sam, and we're going to go in high level here, Auntie
oh,
B.
Oh, God.
So here we go. This is a nice, easy one to start with. So question one.
Okay.
Which of these stadiums is Everton's home ground? Bellfield or Goodison Park?
That would be Goodison Park.
Do I like that?
Bellfield is the previous training ground before Finch Farm.
Then an extra fact thrown in there as well. Question two. What do Everton mascots throw into the crowd? Is it biscuits, pies or toffees?
That would be toffees.
Do I like that?
They're actually Everton mints. They're horrible. But
What's Everton mints then?
It's like a toffee centre with like a mint humbug on the outside. So it's a horrible combination. But yeah, this the toffee lady still throws them. You always try and get them, but they are disgusting.
I look forward to them if I ever go. So I'm sending you an image over now of a footballer, and you need to tell me whether this man that you see in front of you is Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Umar Niasse, Theo Walcott, or Yerry Mina.
That would be Umar Niasse.
Do I like that?
Do you know what? He's a bit of a legend. He, like, Ronald Koeman bullied him terribly.
Really?
Yeah, he was an absolute shitbag to him. He took away his squad number, took away his locker, made him train with the under-23s, eat his meals with the under-23s. He's a really horrible bloke, Ronald Koeman.
Yeah, that's weird when they do stuff like that. I think that's just degrading.
Yeah, I think he went out on loan to Hull and scored a couple for them. Hmm. But yeah, there's no need for it, is there?
No, nothing like that. That'd be
go on.
No, go on, carry on.
Well, Ronald Koeman came in saying, oh, you know, I might be a bastard, but I've got unrelenting standards. And, ended up having to be bailed out by Sam Allardyce. So he clearly didn't have unrelenting standards. I'm delighted he's been handed this poison chalice at Barca, to be honest, because he's a piece of shit.
Well, I mean...
Sorry, that was quite a long answer,
wasn't it? No, I think that's a fair enough answer. And also, remember who the adjudicator of this quiz is, Mr. Graham Taylor. I think he'd have something to say about Koeman after he robbed us of our World Cup 1994.
Oh, God, yeah. I wasn't even considering that. But, yeah, absolutely. His entire narrative arc is baddie.
Exactly. awful. So the good news is, Sam, you're not going to finish bottom of the table because the bottom of the table is two. You've got three questions right and two is bottom, Nathan Caton with Brentford. I've apologised, everyone. I've apologised. I don't know where that quiz came from. I'm sorry. It's hard to find Brentford FC quizzes. So this is a bit trickier, this one, but you might get it. So this is question four. In the Premier League 18-19 season, what position did Everton finish in the 2018-2019 Premier League?
Did we...
So there's options here. Did you finish second, fourth, sixth or eighth?
Oh, eighth. I'm astonished we finished that. We did. We finished that highly.
Do I like that?
And that is correct. You're now on to question five. Which of these strikers scored the most goals for Everton in the 2018-2019 Premier League season? There's a bit of a theme, according to this quiz, 2018-2019. So who scored the most amount of goals? Was it Dominic Calvert-Lewin? Was it Gylfi Sigurdsson? Oh, legend, one of my favourite players of all time. Or Theo Walcott?
In 18-19? See, that's tricky because that was... Sigurdsson had a quiet season last season, but I think the season before was his good season. It won't have been Walcott. I think it was too early for Calvert-Lewin. Yeah. I think it was Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Gylfi Sigurdsson? He's going in.
Do I like that?
It's correct. And bear in mind at this point, you're taking the adult BBC quiz, not the CBBC lark. Question six. How old was Wayne Rooney when he scored his first goal for Everton in the Premier League? Was he 20, 18 or 16?
He was 16.
16. Putting it in.
Do I like that?
Question seven. Which Everton player was shown the most yellow cards, can you guess, in the 2018-2019 season? Was it Kurt Zouma? Was it Andre Gomez? Or was it Bernard?
Solely based on the position he plays, because he's a central midfielder, I'm going to say Andre Gomez.
Oh, here we go.
Do I like that?
It's correct.
Yay!
Guaranteed second place. Two questions to go to get joint first, and then we're going to have some sort of finale if you get 10. to, you know, like a sudden death each question each. I'll have to sort something out for that.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
And are you saying that for the quiz, or are you saying that about Everton? Which one?
Both, constantly. Everton and my performance in life.
Okay, no, I knew this was going to be... I was going to use this as one of my facts, actually, but I really struggle pronouncing it, so you might have to help me with this. What does the club's motto... Oh, God. Oh, I'll have to...
Nil satis.
Nil satis nisi optimum?
Mm-hmm.
Stand for?
Nothing but the best will do.
Well, you got. I'll give you three options, which is... You're close.
Oh, sorry.
Nothing but the best is good enough. Play your best game, or we are the greatest.
Nothing but the best is good enough.
And that is...
Do I like that?
You're on to question nine. Question nine, I'm getting nervous. what was the original name of the club? Was it St Domingo FC? Was it Everton Church Club or Merseyside Rovers?
It was St Domingo's FC. The church is still there.
St Domingo's FC. I like Everton Church Club. That sounds pretty groovy. Sounds like something your parents would send you on Sunday afternoon.
Do I like that?
That's correct. And we are on to question 10. Okay, here we go. So, question 10. Everton were one of the founding clubs of the Football League, but when were they first founded? Was it 1868? Was it 1878 or 1888?
1878.
It is correct. Correct. Sam White, you are now joint first position in the league of comedians talking about football's 10-question sudden death quiz challenge. Congratulations. Yay. Top of the league with Leicester.
Outstanding.
Now, it's bad news for me, actually, this, Sam, because normally when someone gets 3 out of 10 and they go, oh, didn't know what that meant, I go, oh, don't worry, because you don't go away empty handed. But I can't say that now, because now I have to think of some sort of winner's quiz. But what I would usually say at this point is that you wouldn't have gone away empty handed. And to thank you for coming on the podcast, I will send this over to you. It is one of my favorite shirts of all time, mainly down to the iconic sponsor. It is a Everton shirt with that classic Chang beer. And if you have it already, I do apologize, but you can never have too many Chang beer shirts.
Oh, no, those are really comfortable. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming on the podcast. Where can we find your work at the moment?
You're probably best looking for me on Twitter at the moment, which is at Sam White, Sam, W-H-Y-T-E, please. Yep, and look out for this podcast that I think is going to happen with me and Kelly Wells.
Yes, let me know when that's live. I'd love to listen to it, and I'll make sure that we send it out to our followers and everything as well. So you guys have all got to make sure you listen to that, because that'd be great. I reckon it'd make a really good listen. So do, as I said, follow Sam on there. That's Sam White, W-H-Y-T-E. Until then, best of luck for the rest of the season, mate. As a neutral watching the Premier League, I'm very excited about teams like Everton.
You too, mate. I'll keep my eye out for Reading's fortunes.
yeah, fortunes. No, brilliant. All right, thanks very much, Sam. Really appreciate it, mate.
Oh, cheers, mate. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Sam White for coming on Comedians Talking About Football. What a lovely lass. Such a pleasure having her on. And don't forget to follow her on Twitter, if you aren't already, at Sam White. That's White spelled W-H-Y-T-E. And find her on her blog site as well, which is samanthawhite.wordpress.com. If you enjoyed the episode, do you know what? I really appreciate you listening. But if you give it a share, I'd love you. And if you could, subscribe or leave us a review, I'd probably marry you. Not going to lie. Either way, thank you for listening. And next episode is Paul Cooper, aka Martin Mucklow, from This Country, and he's talking about Fulham. Until then, thanks again, Sam, for coming on, and I'll speak to you guys soon. If you want to follow us on social media, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram with the same handle, at ComTalkFootyPod. You can find us on Facebook, just search Comedians Talking About Football. You can do the same for our YouTube account, which has got loads of extra content on there, if that's your sort of thing. Till then, take care, guys.
Football. Soccer. At the end of the day. Football. It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Podcast Network.